It's got a death curse.
Don't all of you be like me. And then who will help you up in the sewer?
Just like having a wardrobe.
What's the boogeyman?
As a matter of fact, it was.
Welcome back. You've reached the first Horror 101 episode of 2015, and this will be our 40th show. And once again, we're going to recap the last 19 shows. You ready for this? Let's hit it.
Yeah, give the bad product a new label. Well, call it what you will, but it's always been Freudstein's house.
If you miss me so much, why don't you come and bring me home?
Okay, I was only kidding around, Henry.
Tell her you're sorry.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Will you tell me what I should do?
I can't go out for a minute.
Oh, you are so pretty. It's a shame you have to die.
The Lord saved you!
And now I need you to save me.
I have silver bullets in here.
Silver bullets in my ass.
Yeah! Eat a bowl of fuck! I am here to party!
You've decided to do this on your own, without the support of the church. You are disobeying the church.
So as you played my theme song, this is the part where I walk to the ring and pose for the crowd, right?
You are no longer Boone. You are Cabal.
I reject your foul suggestions! Leave him at once!
All you reject is the true God.
Look, Baron Spray didn't even touch those spider hills. I think someone should take a run out to Colby's place.
Nobody has lived in that building for 3 years.
No! What did you put in my tea?
The organism is growing at a geometric rate. By all accounts, it's at least 1,000 times its original mass.
If it was Karen, I told him it was Karen, but no one believed me.
4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 50, 52,
you're lost!
So the 40th show, Horror 101, first show of 2015. I'll tell you what we're not going to be doing this time around.
We're not doing a top 40 show. Much like the top 20 show, which took like 4 weeks to put together. Pulled my fucking hair out and almost blew my head off putting that fucking show together. No, we're not doing that.
No top 40?
No, we're not doing that. Top 20 was enough.
How about just top 20 more?
Absolutely not. Instead, here's another idea. How about we focus on a movie that's celebrating its 40th anniversary this year in 2015? That sounds like a better suggestion. Going through the list of 1975 horror films, there were three titles that came to mind. The first was Steven Spielberg's Jaws. Is it a fantastic movie? Certainly. Does it deserve the Horror 101 treatment? Absolutely. But what can we say about Jaws that hasn't been covered 1,000 times? We can't educate your fears with that film any more than we can further your education telling you that 2 plus 2 equals 4. Everyone knows that, and everyone's seen Jaws before. Besides, there are other reasons that we might want to pass on recording that one this evening.
So the nefarious Paul B. would never let us live it down if we did that show without him.
If we did Jaws without him?
Yeah.
Yeah, but he's got a litany of shit that we can't do while he's in China, which is like every fucking week of the year, except for 2, maybe 3.
That may be his favorite film of all time.
Jaws?
Yeah.
Isn't he due to come home soon?
Soon.
February,
soon.
Right? He's coming home in February?
Yeah.
The man is nefarious.
The second title worth considering was Dario Argento's Profondo Rosso from 1975. You might know it as Deep Red. It's one of Argento's more well-known giallos from that period, starring David Hemmings and Dario Nicolodi.
You might have seen the clip of the guy in like a library. And all of a sudden, this door busts open, and this little freaky-ass doll comes walking at him, and he cracks it. The cover of the movie is like this doll with half of its head cracked off. No, it's not ringing any bells?
No, sorry.
The cover is familiar.
What we decided on was something a little more obscure, and there were a few reasons why we went with this film. First off, the director is Canadian. And in all honesty, it really is a travesty that we haven't put the spotlight on this man sooner here at Horror 101. He's been responsible for some excellent genre titles, including the remake of The Fly back in 1986, Dead Ringers with Jeremy Irons, The Brood with Oliver Reed, Videodrome with James Woods, Scanners with Michael Ironside, Stephen King's The Dead Zone with Christopher Walken. This is just a few of his horror contributions. This time around, the world-famous Brian Stewart, cult sensation Nick McPherson, the lovely Nude and I will be covering the very first feature film of David Cronenberg. You might know it as They Came From Within, but up here in Canada, we know it simply as Shivers.
Cronenberg is kind of like the Canadian Lynch. Maybe not so extreme, but he works in art, he works in abstract. He's trying to give you a message, but he does everything but show you exactly what he wants to tell you. He uses art and metaphors and really weird settings and plot devices to try and get a message across. But his first feature movie, which we just read, was partially financed by the National Film Board of Canada.
Go Canada!
Was called Shivers from 1975. It was also called Nude. What else was it called?
They Came From Within.
They Came From Within. And it's an interesting take. It's his take on the zombie genre, but in a completely different method.
Now, you told me a little bit about the story behind this one, and it reminded me a lot of Night of the Creeps.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. So it's in that realm where there's like an infection, and it's spreading.
Hmm.
So it was very much like a zombie film, but it was contained in this building. It's very Canadian. It's all in Montreal. I think it was shot in Toronto. I'm not too sure where it was shot.
This was filmed in Montreal, Quebec.
It was Montreal, Quebec. Okay.
You know, I'll be looking for references to The Tingler too in this, because I bet you anything is going to get referenced. The old Vincent Price movie, the William Castle film.
Well, and this is why I like when you're involved, because you find these things, right? Even though sometimes you reach quite a bit.
If the original Vincent Price movie was about a creature that crept inside people watching horror movies. And if you didn't scream, it would constrict and crush your spine and you would die. You had to scream to save yourself. But it was a parasite that affected the viewers in the audience watching the horror movie.
Was this a Corman movie?
No, this was William Castle.
Castle.
Yeah.
Besides The Fly, have you ever seen any Cronenberg films?
This one.
You have seen the...
I have seen this one.
Nick has seen this one?
I have seen this one.
Of all the films that we've covered so far in the last 40 shows, I would not think that this would be the one that you had seen. Because it is fairly obscure. It's funded by the National Film Board of Canada, for fuck's sakes.
I know.
Are they going to play that... cheesy-ass music with the loon in the background during the opening credits.
Oh, they gotta do the Lumberjack one. They gotta do the Lumberjack song.
Let's watch the film, and we'll discuss it. Are you guys up for it? Shit. Hold on, let's pause this.
Hello. I'm Ronald Merrick, and I'm here to invite you aboard our Starliner. Yes, it's true. Day-to-day living becomes a luxury cruise when you've made your home at Starliner Tower Apartments. Although downtown Montreal is only 12 and a half minutes away, once you've crossed the Carrier Bridge to Starliner Island, the noise and the traffic of the city might as well be a million miles away.
I do like the intro, though. They get the telling of the tale out of the way, and they do it in cheesy 70s slideshow / infomercial style, which kind of reminds me of Venture Brothers a bit, you know. They all, you know, turn the page at the sound of the, you know, whatever. But it reminded me of that. It brought me back instantly to that era.
Well, the beginning of the movie is basically an infomercial for this pristine island community. You know, come live here. Isn't it nice? We got a golf course and all the amenities you could want. And bachelor and one bedroom and two bedroom and this, that, laundry service. And
updated laundry.
And everyone's a fucking sexual nutball. ...1975, okay, you got this nice pristine infomercial, you're like, okay, Starliner, Towers, whatever. And then you go right to an old man assaulting what looks like a schoolgirl, because it looks like she's in the Catholic school dress, you know? strangling her, cutting her open, dumping acid into her, and then cutting his own throat. So, I mean, 1975, yeah. Within 5 minutes, you're given something like, okay, that's going to keep you in your seat.
Yeah, it was an effective hook. I mean, it
definitely
was
interesting. Like,
what the hell's going on
here? I mean, if everybody was like, what the fuck are we watching an infomercial for? Okay, I'm kind of interested. Creeped out, weirded out, yep. But now I'm going to watch the rest of the movie.
You'd think walking into a bloody scene with two bodies, one of whom you know, would rattle you a bit. But not the good Dr. St. Luke. Curiously, cool as a cucumber.
You knew these people. So I knew the man, Emil Hobbs. He was a doctor and professor at the university. I saw the girl around the building. I didn't know her. She never came into the clinic.
So what brought you up here?
When he called me at 6 o'clock this morning, Hobbs called me. I thought I was dreaming, you know. I hadn't heard that voice in so long. He said, meet me in apartment 15, 11. Thank you.
What's that? Two grisly murders? Right in front of me? I'll just mumble something and walk away.
It's clear from the start something is not okay in these cozy Starliner apartments. Why would Dr. Hobbs kill this young girl the way he did and then off himself up in that tower and at the same time facilitate a meeting between Hobbs' assistant Rollo and our good doctor that won't emote? Because plot, bitches!
This was Hobbs' my project. What we're trying to find was an alternative to organ transplant. I keeping you up?
No.
You're bored, right? To you, organ transplant is just yesterday's kishkas, right? Look, you got man, right? And you got parasites that live in, on, and around me, right? So, why not breed a parasite that can do something useful? Huh? A parasite that can take over the function of a human organ.
I gotta give the actor credit who played that second doctor, the one with the glasses, who was fascinated with pickles the entire movie. But he had quite many a page of like technical dialogue, and he made it interesting. You know,
I liked him. Is he? Who is that?
He actually was probably the best performer in this movie.
Remember what his character's name was? Because I was looking for him earlier.
Rollo.
There we go.
But I forget who said it, but if you have to give people boring dialogue, have them eating while they talk, because it kind of makes it more interesting. But it works.
That's Joe Silver.
Okay. It's like the corner that's always eating a sandwich when he's around the body. You know?
I swear I've seen him in something in a newspaper setting where he was like an editor or something.
Yeah, let's go back to this guy's career. Whoa. Started back in 1949.
Wow. Okay.
You got a guy with a bad kidney, right? Now you put the bug in him. The bug goes to work on the kidney, dissolves it, though the body assimilates it. Now what do you got? You got a perfectly good parasite where you used to have a rotten kidney. Right? I know what you're going to say. You're going to say it's crazy.
Crazy, immoral, not to mention dangerous, and after Dr. St. Luke makes it back to his clinic at the Starliner, the calamitous intent of Dr. Hobbs is revealed.
Of course that was a Venture Brothers reference. Deal with it.
Yes.
Rod? Me, Rollo.
You know, I always thought Hobbs was funny, but I told you that before, right? I just never knew how funny until now.
Anyhow, I've been going through his papers, and what it adds up to is this. Hobbs believed that man is an animal that thinks too much. An over-rational animal that's lost touch with its body and its instincts. How do you like that? In other words, you know, too much brain and not enough guts. You know, so what he came up with to help our guts along was a parasite that's, a combination of aphrodisiac and venereal disease that will hopefully turn the world into one beautiful, mindless orgy.
Well, I think it sounds a little crazy to me.
You want to talk about crazy? While he's getting this information over the phone, a young 27-year-old Lynn Lowry is undressing in front of him, giving him the fuck me eyes. This guy gives us nothing. He just won't give us any emotional response to anything. Nothing.
I have a funny feeling all those things were unscripted. They were trying to get a rise out of him. They were trying to get him to emote or do something to see if he would break character on camera. And the movie just gets more ridiculous as it goes on. How much? Just take off all your clothes. I know it's not the script, but do it. See what he does. He's still giving the lines.
Nothing.
Look at
that. His pulse never went above 85. Even when he ate her tongue.
It's like he came back from Vietnam and just made a quick stop at Tijuana just to make sure he was completely fucked up emotionally.
Oh.
Look, the important thing to you, Roger, is this. You know, Annabelle, Well, he was using her as a guinea pig.
Guinea pig?
Right, now he implanted her with a parasite. And once it took over, well, apparently she went berserk. I guess Hobbs wasn't ready for that, so I guess he just had to kill her.
Oh, great. The guinea pig was the Starliner whore. She fucked everything that moved. Nothing good can come from this.
Well, maybe Hobbs didn't know it, but Annabelle Brown was a pretty popular girl around Starliner Towers. I've got three men here, maybe four, hosting large, free-moving, apparently pathogenic abdominal growths that nobody had tried to identify.
Oh, they're all fucked. No, literally, they're all fucked. They're all gonna fuck each other. They're gonna wanna fuck each other. That's what this thing does. Everybody fucks everyone.
I'm gonna meet one of them soon. Followed by the name of Tudor. It's on the, you know, on the directory there. You can just meet me up at the apartment.
Oh, Mr. Tudor, you're not looking so well.
I just thought the effects work on that was really well done.
This was way before the bladder effect was cliche.
Yeah.
Bladder effect started becoming cliche, I'd say, about 83, 84. This was 75. So back in 75, wow, watching people with their shit moving, you know, like, people bought that. You know, like, we look at that and we're like, that's an old effect. We grew up watching it 1,000 times. It doesn't really do anything for us. But in 75, people were probably grossed out watching that shit.
Come on, fella.
And then watching some guy talking to it like, oh, yeah, baby, we're going to be best friends. People are like, no.
Oh, yeah, that's my runner-up thing is, for a second, you're like, what exactly is he talking to?
Yeah.
Sounds like he's giving his penis a pep talk.
Oh, yeah, we're going to make so many friends.
We're going to fuck everything, just not when the camera's on. You understand?
That's why I come and leave me alone.
If it doesn't have a hole, we're going to make one.
These parasites, they have some interesting characteristics. If you're infected with them, you turn insidiously horny. If there is such a thing. They can also survive outside of the body, too. You'll see them as slugs crawling around. They attack people, they can burn on contact, they leap at you. It's some crazy shit. And they're like herpes. Even a kiss from someone infected is enough to transfer this creature and pass it along. So even before our unfazable doctor and his lovely assistant knows what's going on, people in the Starliner are acting fairly peculiar.
I'm hungry for love. I'm hungry for love!
There's strange-looking people in this movie that got cast. Yeah. I think because they look strange. You thought Steve Buscemi looked strange. My God, the guy who... The concierge for the place, or whoever was the hotel?
Mustache, yeah.
Wow. Bizarre. That took a long second to get used to that face.
Pretty soon, the Starliner is just one big cat-and-mouse game, okay? It's very much like a zombie film, except the infected don't want to eat you. They just want to cuddle. No. No.
It's faff time.
Oh.
it's faff time. We're watching this. I'm looking over, and Nick's got his pad up. He's like, I've got an awkward boner right now. I'm like, what is that?
I have the weirdest boner right now.
And then when the girl's getting raped and assaulted, I look over, and he's holding up, this is my fetish. I'm like, what is he doing? What is that?
Oh. Hey, come on out. You want to go to a party?
Yeah. The two gay guys weren't aggressive. Did you notice that? They didn't try to break down the door. So I'm wondering if they weren't infected at all.
Yeah,
if they were just two gay guys in an elevator.
They're just the swim team.
And they're like, oh, I guess he's not interested. So they keep walking.
They're just like, oh, hey, you want to come to a party? And then they hear a party down the hall. They're like, oh, well, fuck this dude. We're just going to go over here where we hear people having fun.
Make sure to put on your helmet. You're going for a mustache ride, whether you like it or not.
Have you met my daughter, Erica? She's a beautiful girl. Come here, Erica. I think you'd really like my daughter, Erica.
This guy will not emote at all.
It's a terrible movie. It was like trying to get him to like show an emotional response, and it kept upping the stakes. It's like, how about this? How about a father and daughter having sex? How about that? Would that do it? No.
Still not.
How about two children with dog collars on being led around by some crazy woman? How about that? No? Still nothing. Wow. You're really going to have to go all out here.
Oh, shit. consult the Oracle on the guy who won't fucking... He can't be phased.
That was Royce, the first guy. Paul Hampton.
Paul Hampton?
Yeah, Hampton.
Hampton.
Hampton Mania.
You played Roger St. Luke.
Did he ever go on to not act in any other movies?
Oh, shit.
I tried smatting once. It hurt.
After this one, he did Chips, the TV series.
Chips.
He had the hair for Chips.
Wow.
Yeah. Benson. He started Benson. A lot of TV stuff. Babylon 5, The Senator.
Babylon 5! No, you didn't watch that. That was...
I watched Babylon 5.
Did you?
Oh, yeah.
Roger, I had a very disturbing dream last night. In this dream, I found myself making love to a strange man. Only I'm having trouble, you see, because he's old and dying. And he smells bad, and I find him repulsive. But then he tells me that everything is erotic, that everything is sexual. He tells me that even old flesh is erotic flesh.
That was actually a cool moment, too, when she was describing the infection and the sickness of seeing somebody who, on one part of her, knows is decrepit and old and disgusting, but at the same time, unable to separate herself from seeing her. Even this old wrinkled flesh is erotic and attractive, and she's strangely attracted to it, and she can't help herself. And if that's the threat of the movie, I think anyone would find that terrifying.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm going to be sexually attracted to everything that walks.
Yeah, every part, possible piece of flesh.
Yeah.
And I believe him. And we make love beautifully.
Still unfazed.
So we find that Lynn's character is infected and her parasite tries to jump out of her mouth to infect Dr. St. Luke, but he calmly knocks her out and proceeds to wrap her face with a yellow scarf. As he's helping her escape the building, she has blood coming out of her mouth, causing this weird stain that makes her look like she's got this golden handlebar mustache. And then things just got really out of hand.
He looks like Hulk Hogan.
She did, a little bit there.
Let me tell you something, brother, I want to make love to you.
Well, that would have been the least strange thing in this movie. Hulk Hogan declaring his wish to make love to another man would have been the least strange thing in this film.
What did he say?
Brother, I want to make love to you.
Oh, shit.
Would I write these 24-inch pythons around you?
Here's another good point. For a movie where everybody is supposedly trying to get it on with everyone they can get their hands on, there's something missing here.
No one really fucks in this movie.
No.
There's no fucking. So how can
there's a lot of implied, like it's going to happen, and then they cut mercifully.
Okay, give me a thrust of a hip or something. You know, give me something to believe that a cock has entered something.
Yeah, but then
you know what I'm saying?
Just gotta take it to the next level. Don't go halfway.
National Film Board of Canada. Maybe there's certain things. Maybe nudity is one thing, but implied sexual acts is another. Maybe it would have been across the line with. I don't know what we have as the equivalent of the decency code that they had in the U.S.
Well, okay, I understand. This is Canada. It's 1975.
So these are implied rape zombies.
After someone's dead, you can operate on the body on a kitchen table, but you can't have implied sex with anyone.
Okay, you can make this film, but nobody fucks. But it's about a whole community becoming sexual fucking pervert deviants who are insatiable. Oh, okay, well, yeah. Just as long as no one is shown fucking... How are we going to do this? Lots of kissing. Lots of kissing and tearing of clothes and writhing on the floor. Scene.
And groping.
One thing I'll give this film, somehow they got Barbara Steele to join the cast. That must have been huge for Mr. Cronenberg. This was his debut film. I'd put it up there with John Carpenter getting Donald Pleasance to star in Halloween. I really would.
Look, why don't you do this? Why don't you go down to the clinic and see that nice doctor, what's his name, St. Luke?
Mm-hmm.
Go down to the clinic and explain to him that Nick is very ill and he has to stay in bed and ask him to come and see him.
He'll be really mad.
Well, so what? You can relax, you'll find out what's wrong with him. And let him be the uptight one for a change, really. It's just ridiculous.
nude. What else has she done? I know. I think Black Sunday.
You said Pitch of the Pendulum.
Yeah, she was in Pit the Pendulum mm-hmm. with Vincent Price. Mm-hmm.
She was the She Beast.
The Ghost.
The She Beast.
Yeah, 1966, directed by Michael Reeves.
Oh, that would have been before he did Witchfinder General.
Yeah.
61 Alfred Hitchcock Presents. It's in the TV series.
Which episode?
She played Phyllis in the Beta Delta Gamma.
Oh, I haven't seen it. I've got the whole set.
The too. Horrible Dr. Hitchcock. She plays Cynthia Hitchcock.
Wait a minute. You didn't catch any Hitchcock reference in this. You didn't mention one. Not one. This is a
full... Well, it was like the pickle scene from Vertigo.
No!
Actually, no, there was one, but I didn't mention it.
Oh!
I was going to let it go. And actually, you said Vertigo. That's the one. It's the sped-up kiss. Yeah. The sped up kiss of the girl kissing the security guard on the floor there was like the Grace Kelly kiss in Rear Window, actually. But it was a stretch, so I'm like, I'm gonna let it go. But you know what? I think what got me most hooked on this movie was seeing all the staples of the 70s. I couldn't shake the cars, the outfits, the
completely
architecture of the apartments was so bizarre.
The completely yellowish orange office.
Oh god.
Yeah, the hanging bead
curtains. The zebra striped bar.
Yeah, that was zebra striped bar with matching zebra striped television.
Oh yeah.
The phone system that looked like an Atari 2600.
Yeah. You know, if they ever remake this movie, which I suspect at some point they will, because they're going to remake everything, they should set it in the 70s. They should absolutely do that.
The way Hobbs designed those things, they get out of hand pretty fast, so you got to be careful. I mean, before you even have a chance to know what's happening to you. Once they start pumping that juice into the old bloodstream, well, I don't know.
Nude, let's score it. Out of 10, what do you say?
I'd have to give it an iffy 5.
Oh, 5? Yes. Oh. Yeah. Wow, wow, wow. Yeah,
like I said, with the exception of the initial scene that piqued my interest, everything else was just, eh.
Yes, very, very critical. Nude is critical.
Oh! 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 Good heavens! Look!
Oh, poor birdie. Why, they're always crashing into tall buildings. The windows fool them, you know.
Oh, come along, Ollie.
It's such a shame. Such a shame. Come along,
dear. Brian Stewart?
I would say if it was only the last half of the movie, like the last 25-30 minutes as a short, it would probably be a 7. But unfortunately, the slow pacing after the initial shock, it's probably going to be... It's going to be a 6.
6? Wow, wow, wow.
Yeah. But you know what? It's still on the right side of good, so there are things there I liked. And it's kind of fascinating to look backwards and see where Cronenberg began. And on that level, it's interesting.
As I was saying, we have quite an exciting variety of completely furnished apartments ready and waiting. Well, you could almost move in this afternoon if you wanted.
Neek!
Well, I'm going to give it a 6.5, maybe a 7, depends on where you start measuring.
Weirdest boner.
The taint! Start from the taint!
No, I actually, I can't remember how old I was when I watched this the first time. We were still living in LaSalle at that point, so I would say late high school. And it stuck with me. I remembered pretty much all the movie, so it was memorable enough. And honestly, it's 6.5. Yeah.
Well, it was never boring.
No, it wasn't boring. It's just it was definitely a first-time effort, and it was rushed.
For all the poking fun we did at this film, there's things to consider. David Cronenberg knew nothing about feature filmmaking in 75. He jumped into this project with both feet completely green. Shivers was all his script, and he wanted no one else to direct it. It took years before financiers agreed to take a chance on him and allow him to direct his movie. With a very small budget and an incredibly short 15-day shooting schedule, Shivers turned out to be a very professional project that was successful even in the US market.
I'm glad we watched it.
It was fun.
I think it'll be a good show. And Cronenberg's got my respect.
You know
he's made some terrifying movies, like The Fly. And like Videodrome is unsettling. The Dead Zone was a good rendition of Stephen King's story with Christopher Walken. He's worked with a lot of top-notch names. There was a time in the 80s where he just went full fucking weirdo. Naked Lunch.
Oh, yeah.
Dead Ringers. Existence. Crash.
Yeah, Jude Law. Oh, Crash was...
Crash, you know, like really odd films.
Hey, how about the pickle? It's used.
This was his zombie movie without zombies. And it worked. Like, it was a cohesive story. There was science behind it. Okay, they were devising a parasite, and it was supposed to do this, but the creator was a fucking nutball that nobody knew about. He created this kind of parasite that does this. Was there a big plot hole in this film?
No, surprisingly not.
I mean, it was smart, because you're not like, yeah. Well, why wouldn't this happen? There's things like, okay, if this was all to turn everybody into sexual deviants, there's not a lot of fucking in this movie, but I think, like Nick said, we're probably dealing with censorship here. You know, you couldn't be too crude, even for a rated R film. They were probably, I'm sure, I mean, sticking kids in bondage. This movie was probably just on the tinge of an X rating.
The line there.
You know, on the tinge of an X rating.
Just the tip to see how it felt.
Well, not in the 70s, too. The fact that the National Film Board of Canada's name is on in the credits, yeah. I think that had something to do with it.
This will be the first show where we're not like, oh yeah, definitely, like, watch this film. You know, yeah, like, it's... Fair. It's
I still wouldn't tell anyone not to see it. I would think, you know what, it's an experience, and, you know, watch it the one time, and just so you can see, like, if... Especially if you're a Cronenberg fan, I bet many a Cronenberg fan would never seen this movie.
More than likely, no.
Yeah, it's pretty obscure.
If you're a Cronenberg completist, you've seen
this film. Oh, you've seen it, yeah.
I would suggest that there's probably a lot of people who've seen The Fly, Dead Ringers, Crash, maybe Scanners, who didn't even know this movie existed. Hmm. You know, and to those people, if you've seen Scanners and you know David Cronenberg and you kind of know of his repertoire, and you haven't seen this one, definitely watch it, because it's his genesis. He made a bunch of shorts, and then he became a filmmaker in 1975. He grabbed some money off a few investors, including the National Film Board of Canada, and made this movie. So check it out and see how he started.
Rollo and police will be here by now, so I think all we have to do is avoid all these people until they find us, or we find them.
And that's Shivers, starring Barbara Steele, Paul Hampton, Lynn Lowry, and Joe Silver. The first film directed by Canadian horror legend David Cronenberg. Not his finest work, to be sure, but hey, just for some perspective, I went back and listened to Horror 101 Episode 1, and oh boy, have we come a long way since then. I realized there wasn't much horror to this episode, but it's our hope that you had fun rolling with us as we dissected Shivers. I can't remember laughing so much during a recording session, it was great. I just received word that the nefarious Paul B. has landed back home. Hopefully he'll pop in to join us for whatever we do for Episode 41. For the world-famous Brian Stewart, cult sensation Nick McPherson, and the lovely Newt, this is Cash Wampum saying thanks for listening and reminding you that there's a horror movie out there that's just gonna scare the hell out of you, and we're gonna help you find it right here at Horror 101, educating your fears.